7:04 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford Brough for the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour two of the program now. Hour two is brought to you by Primetime Craft Beer. Meticulously brewed for quality and taste, Primetime is full flavor without compromise. No compromise at all. You can get some at a liquor store near you, or you can visit the brewery to see how it's made.
We are coming to you live from the Kintech studio, Kintech Canada's favorite orthotics provider. Powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Yeah, Christopher Walken read there. That was good. The answer to
Christopher Walken?
Walken.
The answer. Five-star review, what are you waiting for?
Five-star review. The answer to this question is Kintech, by the way.
Kintech? It's fast enough for you, old man.
Okay, friendly reminder to get
stop.
Sorry.
Get your... when he says scallops in Wedding Crashers, that's all. Apropos of nothing, that's the most Christopher Walken moment of all time. Like, no one's asking him to pronounce it funny. No one pronounces it funny. He's telling you stories about your scallops.
It's like the Foo Fighters.
Yeah, he's great.
He asked Dave Grohl how to pronounce it on Saturday Night Live. How do you introduce these?
We were having this conversation yesterday about like pasta and pasta, or aunt and aunt.
Yeah.
Drama.
Yeah, and then I realized, A Dog, we should be calling you A Dog or something like that.
No, the Canada would be A, because the Americans that do like the Mazas and the Pastas and the Dramas.
You're a dual citizen.
Well,
so south
A Dog.
Born here.
South of the border, you'd be A Dog.
That's correct. Down there, I'd be A Dog.
A Dog.
Yeah, well, in certain places in the States, it would be like Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to Canada.
Yeah. Them all dogs up there.
We got slightly off topic here, as we are wont to do on the Halford and Brough Show. Reminder, because we're going to dive into the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket in this segment. We got an open segment. Send in your what we learns. Couple things here. One, hashtag it WWL. Two, if you want to win a $100 gift card to Primetime Bridge Brewing, I'm just going to say that as one phrase now. It's easier. Send in a what we learn and make it good. Put a beer emoji into the text. You'll be entered into the contest. I repeat, it's a contest. Best What We Learn gets a $100 gift card to Bridge Brewing. Okay? Jason, you've got some flagged. You wanted to dive in here as we talk more Canucks on the heels of their 4-1 loss to the Nashville Predators on Tuesday night.
Well, a lot of texts coming in about Elias Pettersson.
Really?
Matty G on Berard. Petey exhibits all the qualities I see in someone that has perfectionism. I see it in my students. When they feel it, they are some of the most brilliant students I've ever seen. When things aren't clicking, even when something is a layup, they get so caught up in their mind because their ability to always be perfect got them this far. They feel a need to never let that go. They don't trust themselves when they should because their self-confidence is shot. They criticize themselves as if they can't do something they obviously can. I feel for the kid because it's so tough to convince them that they can when they get so down. People often say they are perfectionists without understanding how bad of a mental health condition it is when someone really is.
That's some good insight there from Matty G.
I think so, too.
I don't know if it's accurate. I mean, for the record, we have less than zero idea of what's going on with Pettersson.
I think a lot of these guys grow up and they think that it's really good to be hard on themselves. And then they take that as like, I'm holding myself accountable. And you think that's really good, right? You should hold yourself accountable. There's a lot of people that don't hold themselves accountable and they're not honest with themselves and their analysis of what they do. But you can take that too far.
Yep,
right?
Yep.
And you can just like, you can get in your own head and you can, you know, and when Matty G is talking about perfectionism, it's kind of an all or nothing thing, right? Sure. So I don't know. We are doing some armchair psychology stuff here, but I don't think that Matty G is far off.
That's fine. I think the other part of it though is that, and I said this earlier in the year, and I'm not sure either people agreed or fully understood what I was talking about. I found when the contract negotiations really reached their fever pitch in and around the trade deadline and the deal finally got consummated, I was like, I hope everyone understands like what they're signing up for, because I think this is going to be it. Like, I don't think that when you talk about the Pettersson and the sort of infamous moment in Carolina where he hit rock bottom and mm-hmm. things got as bad as they could go, I think some people naively thought that that was the solution and that he had figured it out. My take on it was you're going to get a peak and valley player because that's who he's going to be. So it's not going to be like, well, I went through the lows, but I figured out how to get out of it. And now it's just going to be highs for the rest of my career.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this is kind of what it might be like, that you're going to get stretches and moments of pure athletic brilliance, pure hockey, like a dynamic hockey player at times, where you watch him and you're like, that is a top five player in the league because he can do so many things and he can do them well. And then there's going to be other...
And it'll probably be the mental side of it more than the physical side of it. Like, he won't wow you mm-hmm. with his power or anything, but he'll wow you with his deceptiveness and the way he thinks the game. Gretzky-ish, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, but when you lose that...
Yeah, he's a peak and valley guy. Like, yeah, I mean, people are like, oh, grow up, be more consistent. Well, then go find a different player. Because part of it is, like, that is who, not, and this isn't just Pettersson. This is mm-hmm. a lot of people. Like, everyone's like, oh, people can change. I'm like, not really. most people are who they are. They try and change their behaviors, mm-hmm. but at their core and at their essence, you are who you are. Anyway, here's another one from Austin and Langley, hashtag WWO, what we learned. Can't believe I'm typing this, but the Canucks missed Tyler Myers last night. Austin, boy, did they. Because it wasn't just Myers being out of the lineup. I mean, this is no disrespect to Noah Juulsen, but that was a tough night for Noah Juulsen at the office.
Well, James in Qualcomm Beach said, what about other guys like Juulsen taking two penalties in his debut and overplaying Forsberg to the corner, allowing him to walk in and snipe? Not a great showing from Juulsen. No, it wasn't.
Now, in the same breath that I just finished explaining Pettersson, that was who Juulsen was. That is who Juulsen is.
Yeah, he's a seventh defenseman. He can come in there and be physical, lay some big hits.
And when he goes in, he mm-hmm. is going to run around and chase hits. And you saw a couple massive hits last night. Got everyone fired up. That's good. But Juulsen can't do that without, I think it's almost baked into the recipe earlier. But mm-hmm. part of it is he's going to chase hits. There's going to be some egregious moments, penalties, missing your assignments, overcommitting, but that's who he is. That's, you know, if you want a safe, steady guy, like a more of an Aaron Rome type, for example,
yeah,
where you're only going to have that one moment of flash madness, right?
Like, right. Probably not the best example to bring up.
No, but you can have, well, because it was the Aaron Rome. Remember the Aaron Rome least exciting player,
I know,
right?
I know.
Anyway, more to my point, you can, as a seventh defenseman, a plug-and-play guy, you can have someone that is going to be low event or high event. If they were really well-rounded, capable defensemen, they'd be top six, top four, whatever.
Noonan in Richmond. Everyone's on PD for missing open looks, but if you watch the power play the last two games, Miller's passing has been awful. He screws up every single one of them. They have to take one of them off as it's a massive momentum killer. Yeah, Miller's a gunslinger. And we've often compared him to Brett Favre. Mm. And do you remember what would happen with Brett Favre when, like, the Vikings would be, or the Packers would be, trailing in a game?
He'd throw an amazing touchdown, and then he'd throw an incredibly bad interception.
Yeah, because he's gunslinging out there, right? Yeah. And you kind of take off the, especially when you're trailing. And by the way, that's another thing. Like, Canucks need a lead. They haven't played with the lead nearly enough in this series. It's only been two games, but, you know, scoring first is so important.
Played with the lead for, what, 8 minutes?
Yeah.
Over the course of two games?
Yeah, it was after the Joshua goal. That's it. That's all they've led in game one. Mm-hmm. So when the Canucks are trailing, Miller's kind of like, well, might as well go for it now. And that's when sometimes you start seeing some of those irresponsible east-west passes that end up being one-and-dones for the Canucks. Like, there were so many times on the power play last night that the Canucks were one-and-done, and it was self-inflicted one-and-dones. It was just like, you get over the line, you make a high-risk pass. Nashville was really good at getting in lanes, whether it's shooting lanes or passing lanes. They're very good at doing that. And so, you know, you can make these high-risk passes, and, you know, sometimes they'll work out and you will get an open shooting lane because you've completed it. But other times, you're going to get picked off, and it's going to be a, well, hopefully not a pick six. It's just down the other, down the
just an interception.
Yeah, yeah, just a pick.
Kirk, the unemployed cracker factory worker, with a question. How do we fix the Canucks power play? Low key, or maybe not even low key. I thought the power play was just absolutely killed them last night, killed the momentum, especially after, consider the DeSmith goal. And that's what I'm calling it now, because that's what it was. They're chanting DeSmith's name. He lets in a bad goal.
The one where Hughes fell.
Yeah, don't worry about Quinn Hughes, okay? Don't worry about him.
He's earned a little bit of rope.
Yeah.
He fell like three times in a minute. He did fall. Like, what is going on out there? Is it ice or something?
Someone check his skates.
Like, what's happening?
Anyway, Helford, keep going.
The power play sucked the life out of him in the first period last night, I thought. Because the goal, the one silver lining with the goal was that it was so early and it was such a bizarre sequence of events and it was so fluky that I felt like you could still carry the opening face-off energy and the first period energy and just kind of be like, okay, we're going to put it past us. There's certain moments in a game where you can.
And then they got two power plays back-to-back. Sissons goes for slashing and then the Preds get too many men.
Which Andrew Burnett was livid about.
He said some swears.
He was dropping the Fs and the Ss and the Qs. Those are all swear words. I think that they got gifted an opportunity, and it could have really altered the course of that
game. Your profanity?
Could have really altered the course of that game. Mm-hmm. If you go in,
they also got a power play right at the end of the first that carried over into the second. Nothing happened.
If you go into the first intermission tied 1-1, all of a sudden you're saying, "Hey, we did a really good job of dealing with adversity here, being uncomfortable, being comfortable in an uncomfortable moment, and there's proof of concept that we came through the other side because we got rewarded with our hard work for drawing a couple penalties. Never mind the too many men." And we converted on it, and now we're all square. It's 1-1, and let's go. So with all the other things that we're kind of pinning the loss on, you know, Pettersson's inability to finish, all the missed shots, DeSmith having to come in for Demko, that power play is now 0-6 in the series. At home, going 0-6 in the first two games, like not even close to good enough. You can't not take advantage of your chances in the playoffs like that. And start making it a thing. Because you go to Nashville now in game three, and it's like, there's real pressure on that unit to convert. 0-6 over the course of two games is real bad. Let me reiterate, real bad.
Besser the Beagle. Halford, do you want to listen to this one?
I do love Besser the Beagle.
I was at the game last night, and Zadorov was the Terminator the Jumbotron suggested he was. We are so lucky to have him and should sign him for the next season ASAP.
Super Dude. That's his new nickname.
So, Rick Tocchet last night gave Zadorov props just apropos of nothing. I don't even remember the question was.
We'll play the audio.
We got the audio? Okay.
Yeah, it's from earlier when he's talking about the leaders needing to step up, one of the three clips that we had this morning. And you brought it up on our text thread. And then I went back and checked. And yeah, like of all the guys to name check about the leadership group, Tocchet goes out of his way to name check Nikita Zadorov. You got it here. Here's what it sounded like last night. Rick Tocchet talking about leaning on the leaders following a 4-1 loss to the Nashville Predators.
Well, you're looking, that's where leadership group and a guy like Zadorov, who's like a, you know, he's just a breath of fresh air. He's a funny guy. He's great in the locker room. You know, those are the guys that you rely on and their leadership group. You know, you group together and make sure that the young guys like Hoggy and these guys understand that, hey, we're okay. That's what it's all about. And obviously the coaching staff, it's got to come from myself too. The leader, I got to lead those guys too to make sure, you know, it's not the end of the world. And Demmer's around a lot. So that should help too.
By the way, Super Dude is a very deep Simpsons cut. That was the pet classroom gerbil that Bart and company had.
Thank you, Super Dude.
So in case you're wondering, like, what the hell are you talking about? I said you have to treat the Zadorov experience like you would the pet class gerbil. Like, you like him when he's around. You know he's not going to be around for a long time. And then you come back from Christmas break and suddenly he's gone. And you have a new Super
Dude. Here's my
prediction.
You have
to huck him off the edge?
Yeah.
Zadorov's going to end up in Toronto on the Leafs.
Yeah. Like, he's not going to be in Vancouver. I just don't think they can afford him. And if you prioritize him, which would be great, you're going to lose someone else that, you know, I don't even know if they're going to be able to afford him. Like, to me right now, if I'm in the shoes...
Would they keep him if they couldn't afford Hronek? Like, let's say Hronek... negotiates hard, and they're kind of like, we're just not going to give you that, so we're going to trade you to someone who will pay you what you want. And
I wasn't thinking that in those sort of like chess moves, but that would be one for sure. My more like immediate one was, who are you going to prioritize the money for? Is it going to be Joshua? Or is it going to be Zadorov? Right.
Well, but Hronek's got to be in there.
But Hronek's
like,
I don't
too. Think it's a given. I don't think it's like a 100% that the Canucks are keeping Hronek.
Yeah, I'm with you. He could price himself out for sure. Anyway, let's not get too bogged down in this part of it. But to what was it? It was Besser the Beagle.
Yeah. Well,
enjoy him while you can. He's been great. And this is where you're going to long and pine for him even more, because he is definitely elevated come playoff time. A guy of his stature and abilities becomes so much more valuable in the playoffs.
Robin Karamios texts in, and Halford, don't immediately dismiss this, please. If Demko is out long term, then the only hope the Canucks have to go on a run is to start Seelovs.
I won't dismiss that.
Pray for a Richard Brodeur reincarnation. We know they can't go deep in the playoffs with DeSmith, but we don't know that about Seelovs, who has actually played in a pressure situation for his country.
Okay.
I do wonder if there's a higher ceiling on Seelovs than there is on DeSmith.
I do, but I also think there's a lower floor.
Imagine they give Seelovs game three. That'd be wild.
So first off, how dare you?
I don't think they will.
One,
no,
how dare you? How dare you think that I would shoot down a potential hot take?
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Nothing will keep me from, like, you know, chasing that hot take. It's the best feeling on the planet. It's well within the realm of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
But here's the thing. How would that exactly play out? Would it be
put him in net to start game three?
No, hold on a sec. I think DeSmith is probably going to get game three, right? Probably going to get game three. So how it would probably have to play out. Because if the Canucks go with DeSmith and they win the Nashville series, then they're going to be like, we're going to stick with DeSmith, right? So he would have to have a bad performance in game three. And then you turn it over to Seelovs.
Correct.
Can we stop using the World Championships to boost the Seelovs?
Why, Greg?
Casey DeSmith played in the exact same tournament for the United States.
How do you do?
His save percentage was .003 less than Seelovs in that tournament. He had a .918.
Less than Seelovs.
Seelovs had a .921. Stop pointing at that tournament as a reason to put Seelovs in.
So
you're saying that DeSmith was the lesser goalie in that series.
.003.
Math seems simple to me.
While I want to play along with the narrative, I do. I know what you're saying. It's like, I think we need to.
Seelovs is the mystery box, though, right? Like, we know what DeSmith is. Seelovs could be anything. He could even be DeSmith.
Yeah. Archers.
Box could be anything. Even a friggin' boat.
But seriously, though, that's true to a certain degree.
Seelovs could be a boat?
No.
I would rather have the goalie that's played behind this defensive structure for the entire season, knows the players, knows his defense.
His bit is perfect, though, because it could be anything. Yeah. Even Casey DeSmith. Like, that's exactly what it is. He could just come in and be the exact same goalie.
Yeah, or even worse.
Right. But it's different, which is exciting. Now, I'll say this.
Just don't chant his name in the first 10 seconds. Just don't do that.
Well, they're probably not going to do that in games 3 or 4 in Nashville, so I don't think we need to worry about that. I'll say this. It's on the table if game 3 goes badly for DeSmith. They just don't have the rope. They don't have the bandwidth. They don't have it's not there a luxury to screw around. Like, can we all agree that he was not good last night? Is anyone going to counter that?
He wasn't good.
Yeah. No, right? So it's not like you could say, well, you know, it's not his fault. He was fine in game two if he goes and has a clunker in game three, right?
So,
and game three is tough. Game three, you're going into Nashville. Yeah. They're going to be all full of piss and vinegar. They started drinking yesterday in Nashville. They got like 3 days to do it. Friday's a long ways away. It's going to be loud. It's going to be aggressive. And you know that there's going to be messaging from Brunette and company that, hey, how about we don't get outshot by like 40 or 50 attempts?
Mm-hmm.
How about we try and put a few more pucks on net? One of the things I thought was crazy yesterday was after the first goal, I kept saying to myself, like, if I'm the Predators right now, I am shooting from center. I'm throwing everything I throw everything on net right now. Like, why would you not?
So we'll talk to Robbie Stanley coming up next about what the Preds have been
Brett
doing.
Festerling's
Brett Festerling's coming up next. So my apologies. Today is a travel day for the Vancouver Canucks. There will be media with Rick Tocchet later in the day after the Canucks arrive in Nashville. I imagine they're going to practice tomorrow in Nashville, and then the game is on Friday.
Canucks playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by All Seasons Roofing. Sun, rain, wind, or snow, All Seasons Roofing has you covered with end-to-end roofing services. For your free quote, visit allseasonsroofing.ca. Brett Festerling joins us next on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Jamie Dodd
and Thomas Drantz.
Get your daily dose of Canucks talk with us weekdays from 12 to 2 on Sportsnet 650.
Or catch up on demand through your favorite podcast app.
Predators' line is tired. Canucks have them hemmed in. Ian Paul, left wing. Zadorov shoots. He scores! Nikita Zadorov off the bench rips it past Juuse Saros, and the Canucks are on the board. It's 3-1.
Super Dude, 7:31 on AO Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff in the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer. Today we are in hour two of the program. Former NHL defenseman Brett Festerling, now an analyst with Sportsnet 650, is going to join us in just a moment here. Hour two of this program is brought to you by Primetime Craft Beer. Meticulously brewed for quality and taste, Primetime is full flavor without compromise. You can get some at a liquor store near you, or you can visit the brewery to see how it's made.
I hope that reference makes it to Zadorov somehow, and he's like, what is this Super Dude?
I think he would love it. Who doesn't, Super Dude's a great name.
Please explain.
Who would not love the nickname Super Dude? Now, the reference itself means he's not long for Vancouver or this earth, but I think it's great. We'll explain it later.
Why would they bury me in the ground?
We have a lot to get to right now. Brett Festerling, he was on the post-game show last night. He joins us now on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Brett. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm good. Unfortunately, not the game I thought I was signing up for when I agreed to do the show yesterday.
I was going to say, when we left the show yesterday, everything was great. Thatcher Demko wasn't injured. Tyler Myers didn't have the flu. The Canucks were up 1-0. Everything was great. Everything's really turned on its head. But I want to start with Elias Pettersson. I was listening to the post-game show, and I saw that Sat asked you specifically as a former player to get your specific take on this. What are you seeing from Elias Pettersson right now? What is Elias Pettersson going through right now?
Yeah, for me, it looks like a confidence thing from an athlete perspective. It's just you have confidence. You're deliberate. You're direct. You're fast, or in that in turn makes you fast. There's less thinking. It's just doing and playing, and that kind of snowballs. And unfortunately, it goes the other way. When you're thinking, you start thinking too much, and you start taking your time. And unfortunately, I think for me, a mean potatoes guy, it was easy for the reset button. It was, off the glass and then get a couple of hits, eat a few pucks.
Right.
And you're kind of back to neutral. Unfortunately for Petey, I think this would be really hard in terms of getting back to an even spot, because for him it's scoring goals and making plays. So it's a lot of stick with it and don't overcomplicate it. But the easiest thing to do is try to do more. And unfortunately that becomes kind of quicksand for him. So it's to me, it looks a lot like a confidence thing.
Did you play with any players where their thinking was their own worst enemy, and they were so hard on themselves that it made it harder for them to get out of a slump when they were in a slump?
Yeah, I think most players, or a lot of high end forwards, go through it, slumps. Petey seems to, I don't know exactly how he gets through it. I think people have heard about, there was a highlight of Corey Perry that would put his stick in the garbage and you would encourage guys to throw their garbage in it and spit in it or whatever, just to get back to remind himself to get into greasy areas and score goals. So everybody kind of goes through it. It feels like this is dragging on a bit for Petey, unfortunately. But yeah, he is a special player. I think he can still come up with special moments and be a game changer, whether he's dominating that game or not, I don't know. But you still do see flashes of brilliance in there.
How do you beat a team like Nashville the way that Nashville is playing when they're fronting the puck and they're just getting in every shooting lane and every passing lane, and that's their game plan? Like, what are some ways that the Canucks can get around this?
Well, you got to get creative. You got to think shot first mentality. Like, obviously they shot the puck a ton last night. They set a record for missed shots and block shots, I believe, in a playoff game. So I don't think it was not shooting it, but you saw moments where guys just dusted it off. I don't think the execution was great last night. I mean, I don't know what you guys have been saying this morning, but in terms of passes missed by 2 feet or bobbled pucks or just that split second of
hesitation,
having to settle it down and not shoot it, kind of cost them a lot. And then that ended up kind of where they were getting shots blocked. So I think you saw a lot of high tip attempts last night. That's obviously part of their game. And seeing passes and high tips, it's probably going a little too east-west than north-south right now in terms of those tips. You probably want it tighter, closer to the net. You saw Suter get a nice opportunity, or a couple guys get nice opportunities off back walls. Even Joshua's post in the third was a shot off the back wall where they got on the forecheck. Guys were able to get to pucks. I think the problem last night was when shots were blocked or they were missed, there wasn't any chance to get second pucks or second opportunities. There wasn't guys there to get it, or it was rimmed around and then it was just a battle on the wall.
We're speaking to Brett Festerling, Canucks radio analyst, former NHL defenseman here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. As a defenseman, Brett, wanted to get your thoughts on Casey DeSmith's performance and not just the shot-stopping stuff. I don't know if you watched the broadcast last night, but the intermission panel brought up he looked really nervous when it came to real sort of basic stuff, like just where to put the puck on a defenseman's stick or how to set them up from behind the net. It just felt like everything had a nervous edge to it. Did you see that as well?
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame him.
Right. The caveat here is that it was a very, very, very anxious moment. I mean, we played the chant of, you know, could you imagine, like, you're Casey DeSmith, all of a sudden 18,000 people are chanting your name, and then, oh, the first shot of the game goes in. Like, it was a nervous situation for sure.
Yeah, 100%. And the crowd had a great ovation for him on the starting lineup. I don't know if they showed that on the broadcast, but that was the loudest cheer in the starting lineup. So you had that building into the first shift, which was really nice at the chant going, and then it goes in, and it just seemed to – it gave this odd zap of energy out of the building a bit. And the building was great. Fans were great last night, but it definitely became a weird moment. And then you're right. There was just kind of 50-50 pucks behind the net sitting there. Does he play it? Does he shoot it? Does he not? There was a couple high blocker saves that end up down in his – right glove or high glove stops and ended up down on the ground. So he's trying to find it. It seemed, yeah, exactly that. It seemed like a nervous goalie. I don't blame him. It was a really hard spot, but unfortunately the first one, it probably just sets that tone for the rest of the game.
So if you're Rick Tocchet, are you feeling more frustrated today that your team couldn't execute, or are you feeling hopeful that they did have so much possession and did come so close so many times?
I think I'm more hopeful that we're still in it. It wasn't their best game. I don't think anybody would argue that. And then you have DeSmith in, and you still were in it. You had Joshua had a post. PD obviously had the empty net that he missed in the first. There's a post at the end of the second that goes off a foot. And then you have guys backdoor. Suter had a couple backdoor opportunities. There was lots of opportunities there to still be in that game. So I think you're positive there. It is a two-hour rule. You need to let go of the loss kind of 2 hours in. It's the same for the wins and losses. There's no time to really dwell on it. So I think you're positive that you can beat this team. It's just you need to execute and stay out of the box.
We're speaking to Brett Festerling, former NHL defenseman, Canucks radio analyst here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. From the other side, Brett, I mean, we spent so much time talking about just the Canucks, which is, you know, fair given that we're the flagship station for the team. But I feel like under other circumstances, we might have spoken more about the opponent. But the opponent, who stood out for you from the Predators through the first two games of the series? Who's really caught your eye, good, bad, or otherwise?
I mean, Saros made some athletic stops. I don't think he's been like amazing, but he's come up with some big stops when he's needed to. Even the Joshua post, he's aggressive. The pass comes out and he's aggressive out of the blue paint in 3 feet. It's a tic-tac-toe play and he's out being aggressive. So I think Saros has caught my eye. That O'Reilly line, when they have opportunities, is really dangerous. Obviously, Forsberg, you see how fast he can pounce on opportunities. Last night, he has 6 feet, and Lindholm ends up 2 feet on the wrong direction of the defensive player there. And then he comes and makes a nice move and goes upstairs onto Smith. So I'd say that top line, Josi and McDonough just looks so solid. They're obviously one of the premier duos in the league, and they kind of prove it. McDonough's so solid in terms of body checks, eating pucks, still has an offensive capability. He's been really, really good. So, I mean, they're top players, and then they just have depth. They have a lot of guys that play the same way. Hughes or Hirona gets the puck out of the blue line, and you have four yellow jerseys that you got to shoot through before you get to the net. They're all buying into that system. You know, I think everybody talked before that Canucks had a deeper lineup, but Nashville plays as a team, and they've done really well just gelling as a group and playing a system. It's not the prettiest system, but they all do it. So that's what stood out the most, is that you have four guys in front willing to eat the puck, that everybody's fronting, everybody's coming back. Maybe they haven't carried possession, but they've all played the same way.
Surely heading back to Nashville, though, the Preds are going to want to have more possession. I just wonder if you play last night's game 100 times, how many do you think the Canucks are going to win?
Yeah, a fair shake of them. Like I heard the broadcast mention 7. You're probably in there. The biggest thing to me is the message from the Canucks all year has been, we need to play our game and we need to execute and protect the middle, and, you know, their whole system's an intangible. I don't think they did that last night. Like, yeah, the Canucks, you're right, would probably win most of them, but I don't think the Canucks really executed and played a great game last night. So it kind of falls on them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one thing if you play bad and you lose because of a hot goalie or whatever it is, but I don't think they necessarily played great or deserved to win last night. I think you want to put yourself in a spot where you deserve to win. Could they have won? Yeah, for sure. They had the opportunities to do that.
So which areas of the game do they need to clean up the most after last night?
Oh, there's unnecessary turnovers, and that comes down to the execution. You saw PD's turnover wasn't very good. There's the battle on the first goal wasn't great. And Lindholm, again, just ends up on... So there's just little details. They're very small in terms of chipping a puck instead of passing in the middle, being 2 feet on the right side or in the guy's pocket instead of on the front side. And then I think, you know, you're going to hear it a lot in 2 days here. Shots through. Nashville does a really good job of fronting. Zadorov just got through. That's successful. The Joshua chance comes off just a simple shot getting through off the back wall. You're going to have to get creative on the side of the net. High tips, like they're obviously trying, but it's going to come down to an execution and will thing to just out battle one in front and get in positions where you can get pucks to net.
As a former defenseman, where's your appreciation level for Nikita Zadorov?
Oh, he's climbed so much on my chart. Yeah. In the last 2 weeks. Just the physicality is amazing. Him hitting, I forget who he hit in the first game, and he turned around and just yelled at him, which would be terrifying. You just yelled at him, just a noise, I think.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, you just see some of his skill in terms of shutting down plays and then skating. When he uses his skates last night in terms of getting out the puck in that third, it felt special. It felt like something that could make a difference in the game. And I think he does that in multiple, you know, or different ways, different avenues, whether it's being physical, blocking shots, or even jumping up in the play and getting physical or contributing on the offense side that way. So I've really liked Zadorov in the playoffs, and he's built for the playoffs, let's be honest.
Yeah, let's say that you're coaching the team and you're talking to Noah Juulsen. Without question, like, it's a tough outing for the guy, tough situation that he's thrown into. But if he's going back into the lineup next game, if you're the coach, Brett, what are you saying to Juulsen to correct some of the errors from last night's game?
Well, I think, like, what are you asking from Juulsen in a game? You want him to be a physical presence, and you just want him to make solid plays. He doesn't have to be Hughes out there. You just want him to be Juulsen, what we saw down the stretch. So I think all in all, he played pretty good. He might have ran around a little bit trying to get hits, which is completely understandable for the situation. So I would say just play within himself a bit more for the physical part, because the hits are going to come to him. He doesn't have to go get the hits.
Yeah.
They're going to come to him, and he'll have that opportunity. And then just simple plays. It's a hockey game. It's make the first pass. Don't look for something else.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you look at it, again, he only played 11-24, but, you know, the two penalties, minus one. Five hits, he had a huge hit, which is good.
Oh, the Forsberg goal, him and Lindholm, like, you know, there's a two-on-two in the corner, and Forsberg somehow comes out with the puck. That's not good.
I would say this. I bet it's, for a guy that plays his style of game, it's got to be the most difficult thing on the planet to do what you do, which is be physical and be Noah Juulsen, but don't be too physical. You know what I mean?
It's need you to be physical, but don't run around.
Find this magical line that we don't even know what it is or where it is, but you have to find it, and you have to toe it the entire night.
Yeah, it's a lot of it's kind of patience. It's going to come to you, but obviously when you have 18,000 people screaming and chanting, it gets you, you know, it raises that adrenaline and you want to go hit something. Now, the Lindholm thing, I think Lindholm just stays in the middle. If Juulsen's in that corner, just let him go to work. You know that, exactly that. Let it be patient, let it come to you. But if he gets in the corner, it's like letting the dog off the leash in the park. You know, like, just let him go to work and you can grab anything that squirts out there.
And your dog is one of, like, the poorly behaved dogs that could do anything. So you gotta hang back a little bit.
Hey, Brad, thanks for doing this today, man. We really appreciate it. Great insight. Enjoy the rest of the series. Let's do this again soon before this thing wraps up.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. That's Brett Festerling, Canucks radio analyst, former NHL defenseman here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. A reminder, you can hear Brett on the post-game show following every Canucks game, also right here on Sportsnet 650.
Do we talk about anything that happened in the other games yesterday?
I don't even think
we've touched on it.
All my notes, all my diligent work last night is gone for naught because we have not talked about anything last night.
Well, we got 6 minutes.
Yay!
So what was the big story from the Rangers beating the Capitals 4-3, the Panthers beating the Lightning 3-2 in overtime, and the Avs beating the Jets 5-2? The Avs tie up that series.
I mean, we gotta go with the Jets because that's the Canadian team.
I thought Hellebuck was going to be the key to the Jets' success. He seems to have allowed a lot of goals in this series.
Hellebuck's turned into Georgiev. Well, he hasn't turned into Hellebuck, but
my head is spinning.
The numbers on Connor Hellebuck through his last six playoff games, following a 5-2 loss last night. Remember, he let in six in a 7-6 win in Game One. Last six playoff games for Hellebuck. His record: 1 win, 5 losses. That's not good. His goals against, 4.34. That's not good.
Halford's still using goals against. Love his it. Save, I respect it.
His save percentage, .876. That's also not good. I don't know.
How are his vibes?
That's... Vibes low. So last night, let's play the Manson goal.
Vibes per 60, is that what it is?
The Manson goal was the backbreaker. It was 3-2. The Jets are trailing late in the second period, but things look okay. They're creating chances. Georgiev's actually playing pretty well. They're creating chances, and he's making saves. And then Nathan MacKinnon finds Josh Manson.
Hey, how did he get a breakaway?
Did he
dig a hole in the middle of the ice and then he came out of it? And
he was
like
hiding.
Like,
he was out of the box.
Yeah, he was out of the box. For all the guys to spring on a breakaway, Nathan MacKinnon finds Josh Manson. Here's what it sounded like just seconds before the end of the second period. Avs go up 4-2, courtesy of this.
Nathan MacKinnon, 10 seconds. He can get the distance in a hurry. Josh Manson out of the box. He scores! The Manimal out of the box onto the score sheet with 6.9 seconds to go in the second period. It's 4-2 Colorado.
Shout out to our boy Connor McGahee for that call. That had all the energy you needed. So the Avs go on to win 5-2.
Also nice.
Very nice. Very nice.
6.9 seconds remaining.
Super nice. That is an interesting series. That thing has been all over the place. Very unpredictable. No one's predicting 13 goals in the first game, a 7-6 win, and all of a sudden everyone being like, they need to bench Georgiev. And then the second game, the Avs put up 5, and all of a sudden you're like, well, now Connor Hellebuck looks like he's a sieve.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tied 1-1 going back to Colorado. So that was interesting. Less interesting, but Carter Verhaeghe is like the most clutch player in the National Hockey League. All he does is score overtime goals. 2 minutes and 59 seconds into overtime last night, Panthers take a 2-0 lead on the Lightning. Here's what that one sounded like. Verhaeghe, another OT winner.
Wrists it back in for the Panthers. That rims around the end wall near side. Lilleberg trying to poke it away from Tkachuk. Loose out front. Backhand try. And they score. Carter Verhaeghe upstairs. And this one's over. The Panthers win it in overtime. 3-2 the final. Carter Verhaeghe, the game winner.
So I'm not saying the Lightning are dead in this, but they're now down 2-0 heading back to Tampa against a team that was favorite to go deep in these playoffs in the Florida Panthers. So they're in a tough spot here. Stamkos scored a classic Stamkos goal last night on the power play with the one-timer.
Vintage.
Tied it at two. Yeah. It was a heck of a shot. And I'm just really curious to see what happens with Stamkos in Tampa Bay because it's just weird that he's, you know, he wants to be there. He's made that abundantly clear, Tampa Bay Lightning have been the team, and Julian Breezeball, the GM there, has been the team that's been like, hold on a sec, we're not ready to talk about this
yet. I think part of this is the this is why playing in Florida sometimes is an advantage, because you can have this situation play out.
Yeah.
If this was in Vancouver, there's no way. They'd be torn apart at the seams.
Mm-hmm.
Every instance, every moment, every time Stamkos missed a shift or wasn't playing well, it's like, ooh, is his nose out of joint because he doesn't have a contract? That can happen. It can happen in Tampa Bay because everyone's like, whatever.
But I'm still just curious about what's going to happen. I mean, it could happen in Vancouver if you're a player, like a veteran player like Stamkos, and you're a pending UFA.
If there was a guy as the captain that won multiple Stanley Cups in Vancouver and was in this situation, it would be a massive story.
Yeah, it would be a story.
Two things. One, I picked Florida to win this series. I think it's far from over. If you're Tampa Bay, and John Cooper talked about this, he thought they played pretty well in both games. You lose 2 one-goal games, 3-2 in each, one in overtime.
And Bobrovsky had to make an incredible save on Dumba.
You know, it's like there's a very thin margin there. I'd say going back to Tampa Bay, you got to feel okay, even though you're down 0-2. By the way, Carter Verhaeghe, here of the active NHLers, there's three that are tied for the NHL lead with 5 overtime winners in the playoffs. Patrick Kane, Corey Perry, and Carter Verhaeghe.
Mm-hmm.
What a classic three names we all thought of.
Yeah, right? Like, what a list.
Also, calling that Bobrovsky save incredible isn't doing it justice. That might have been the greatest save I've seen in, like, 10 years.
So he dove across and robbed Dumba. And it was in the third period, too, right? It was a very clutch save to keep it at 2-2.
So one of the few goals where you'd be like, you know how you normally say you got to get the puck up?
Yeah, he did it.
You got to keep the puck down.
He did everything he should have
underneath.
Done. He did all the right things.
Yeah. Slide it, Matt.
The other one from last night, the Caps are toast. I mean, it's funny because I just said, well, you know, Tampa Bay and Florida, that series isn't over because it's only 2-0. I still think the Bolts have a chance. I do not think the Caps had a chance. The Rangers won 4-3. We don't need to play the K'Andre Miller goal. I'll just say he scored a shorthanded goal. So a defenseman scoring a game-winning shorthanded goal, only the fourth time in 20 years that's happened in the playoffs. The Rangers are, I mean, I'd be shocked if the Capitals can win 4 of the next 5 and get out of the first round with that series. It felt like the Rangers had a bye in the first round.
This is why I was upset when the Capitals made the playoffs. Yeah, it would have been so much more interesting to have a team like Pittsburgh or Detroit in there.
They expended so much energy just to get into the postseason, and it's not like it's a young team, right? They got a lot of guys on the wrong side of 30. You know what? Full credit to them for whatever I don't know what they're trying to accomplish other than getting Ovechkin the goal-scoring record, and they did it while also going to the playoffs. So I guess in a way it's working on some level. Like I would be very worried about the future if I was a Washington Capitals fan, but in the present, you're going to have a guy that's going to break Gretzky's goal scoring record and you made the playoffs. So I guess there's something to be said for that, but it's a weird team and they're not going to beat the Rangers. The Rangers are going to win that series. I'll throw that out there. Okay. We're up against it for time. We are going to go to the Nashville side of things coming up. Robbie Stanley, 102.5 The Game, Nashville Sports Radio, is going to join us. He's also the Preds correspondent for NHL.com. He's going to join us on the other side. We'll talk about how the Preds are feeling now that they've got the split and the series is headed back to Nashville. Finally, before we go to break, all Canucks playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by All Seasons Roofing. Sun, rain, wind, or snow, All Seasons Roofing has you covered with end-to-end roofing services. For your free quote, visit them online at allseasonsroofing.ca. You are listening to the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.